Tonight we're going to share some ideas on creating an exciting life. And I have a couple of points here. My world is my mirror is our theme for tonight. And the ideas we're going to share, I choose what I want to experience out of my world, but I need to know who am I? How did I get to be me? What choices do I have a right to make, and how long does it take to experience my choices? How about that? Kind of intensive sort of things. First,
maybe you say who you are.
Excuse me?
Maybe you say who you are because...
Oh, I see. Yes, I should say who I am.
Yeah.
Thank you. My name is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly. I am the Dean of the University of Healing in Campo, California. And the University of Healing is a school of philosophy, of positive thinking, and teaching students all around the world ideas of building up a better understanding of who they are and being who they are. Now, you've all heard the stories of the Buddha, and you've heard the stories of Hinduism, you've heard the stories of Christianity, you've heard the stories of all these different philosophies, and every one of them say basically the same thing. When the Buddha was teaching, he would hold out a rose, not a rose, a lotus for his students, and he'd say, study this and you will know yourself. Study this and you will understand who you are, because it'll speak to you and it'll tell you who you are. When Zarathustra, one of the great philosophers of all time, living in Persia, as he lived in Persia, the king of Persia came to him and said, oh, great Zarathustra, you're a wise, wise fellow. Will you please tell me how I can take care of the problems in my country? In my country, the whole thing's going to pot. The war is coming in, and the neighbors are trying to take over Persia, and the people are not paying their taxes, and I just got the whole thing's a mess. And so Zarathustra said to the king, he said, sir, I will give you my teacher. And so he reached down and took a seed from the ground and handed it to the great king of Persia and said, this, sir, is my teacher. And the king was very upset, and he threw the seed down on the ground, and he took his horse and he stamped out of there and dashed back to the palace with his entourage. And it wasn't more than a few months later, when things were going really bad in the kingdom, that he sent one of his men to see Zarathustra and apologize and said, will you please come and teach me about peace, about prosperity, about living in a harmonious kingdom where my people will like me and where the kingdom will flourish and be a wonderful kingdom? And Zarathustra said, no, I will not come and teach you, but I will send one of my students to come and teach you. So the student went to Persia, went to teach the king. And when he was teaching the king, he showed the king that the way of peace was a much more effective way to run a government. The way of getting the people to find out what their needs were and serving their needs, meeting the needs of the people, loving the people, and being generous with them. And within a very short time, in fact, within less than a year, the government did a complete turnaround. The enemies who once were clamoring at the borders of Persia trying to take over the country, they stopped for no reason at all. They just stopped. And peace took place in the country. And the people who were reluctant to pay their taxes and reluctant to support the king and his programs began to give willingly and lovingly of their taxes. And they began to feel the love, the unconditional love of the king. And this is the teaching of all great philosophers and all great teachers. I, of course, don't need to tell you about the teachings of the Buddha. You're familiar with those. You're familiar with many of the other teachings. But stop and think what each one of the great teachers have taught. You see, when the Buddha was in bliss, and he came out of the bliss, He wasn't the Buddha at that time, of course. When he came out of bliss, what did he say to his followers, the men who were with him as he had been a mendicant monk? He said, "Boys, I've had it. Let's go and get something to eat." And they say, "You go and get something to eat? We're supposed to be fasting and dieting. We're not supposed to do that." He says, "Nope, I have been meditating. And in my meditation, it has come to me that we are not to deny ourselves, but we are to live fully in the abundance of the universe." And so he did that. And from that moment forward, he went on with his philosophy and went on with his life as an example to all humanity, teaching people to like themselves, to love themselves, to respect themselves, to revere themselves. Now, you are the father of seven children, and you are at the edge of the river, and one of your children falls into the river and is being swept away. Now, as the father, you should dive in and save that child, but you don't know how to swim. Should you stay back and take the six children away from danger at the river's edge, or should you try to save that child that is swept away from you? You see, this is something that we must all learn how to do. If the father had been wise, he would have learned how to swim before he took his children down by the river. And he would have taught his children how to swim in the shallows, in the quiet waters. But like most people, we are foolish. And we don't use good wisdom. We don't stop and realize who we are. Each one of us is a divine being. You see, in the universe, anywhere in the universe, God is. God is in everything, as everything, because God created everything. That's the story that we understand, and that's the understanding that we have. So then, God must have created you. You think God created you? Do you think that you're a creation of a divine idea, of a divine being? And if you're a creation of a divine being, if you are your father's child, if you are your mother's child, then you have in you all of the genes, chromosomes, and what have you that your mother and father have. If you are a creation of God, you must have in you all that God is. Now, people are afraid to say that they are God because of one thing. The moment you say, "I am the son of a king," you have to act like the son of a king, right? And that's not always easy. The moment you say, "I am God," you have to act like God, because everybody is God, and you have to act like that, and that's tough. That's real tough, because God knows no limitation, and we should know no limitation. So when we start acting this way, we start acting not superior to anyone else, because everybody else is just as much God as you are. Just like, is he a better human being than you are? You know? You're all equal human beings, aren't you? And you're all equal divine beings. You're all equally created by the infinite creative cause. What we want to do is to tap that awareness of who we are and be that awareness of who we are and live that awareness of who we are in everything we do. And we say, "Oh, he's the king of Persia, you know. He's got all these people following him, and he's got this wonderful country behind him, right? And he's better than me, and I need some help, so I'm going to go to the king of Persia and ask for help." And so what happens when I go to the king of Persia and ask for help? He's going to say, "Within you is the help." Because the statement that's quite common throughout all of philosophy is, "Man, know thyself. Man, know thyself." We are supposed to know who we are. We are supposed to understand who we are. And we are supposed to live as who we are. We're not supposed to pretend that we're somebody else. We're supposed to know that we are divine, that we are beautiful, that we are fantastic, that we are glorious. And when we begin to know that, then we begin to act that way. And when we begin to act from who we really are, then we'll be utterly fantastic. I had a young man in Duluth, Minnesota, And he was having trouble with algebra. Ever heard of algebra? And he was having trouble with algebra, and it was just giving him a tough time. But he had a father who wanted to take a test as a stockbroker. And the father didn't like mathematics and found that the mathematics of the stockbroker's test were very difficult. So I talked to the father about taking the test. And I told him, say that I know that I know that I know the divine in me knows the answer. I know that I know that I know the divine in me knows the answer. Well, now, Todd, the kid, was standing around the corner, you know, so we didn't see him. So his father and I didn't see him, but he was listening. I know that I know that I know the divine in me knows the answer. And so the next day, Todd went to school and took a test in algebra. He got every single answer correct by saying, I know that I know that I know God in me is the answer. I know that I know that I know the divine in me is the answer. Sort of flippant, you know, sort of not really being very appreciative of what he was saying, but he was, because he just said it. And he got every single question correct. Well, the teacher called his father in and said the boy cheated because he got all the answers correct, you know. And so the father went in and talked to the teacher and said, well, what did he do wrong? Well, he got all the answers correct. Well, that sounds good to me. But he was supposed to, you know, he hasn't done that. He's been a bad person, a bad student in algebra up to now, and just not getting all the answers right. And the father said, well, what's wrong with it? Well, he copied from somebody. Well, is there anybody around him who got 100%, you know? Anybody else who got, no? Well, what are we going to do? And so they called the principal in. And the principal says, well, give him another test right now. And the teacher says, but he's got to tell how he got to that answer. You know, in algebra, you have to tell how you got to the answer. You can't just write the answer down. And so the boy says, okay. So he did the test, and he wrote down how he got to the answer, and he wrote down all the answers, got 100%. You say, wow, that's fast, you know, for saying, I know that I know. But he said it with such innocence. He said it with such confidence. Which said, he believed in me. He thought, Dr. Byerly must be a very intelligent man, because, you know, he knows all these things, and he's gone to school, and he's so wise, and, you know, he thought all those good things about me. I think that's nice of him. Well, then, the father had gone in and taken his exam for a stockbroker. And he, too, aced out the test. He got 100%. And every time he had a question in dealing with mathematics, he would instantly say, I know that I know that I know. The divine in me knows the answer. And he did very well. Now, he began to turn to the divine in him and listen to the divine in him. Listen to what it had to say. And as he was guided by the divine in him and followed it, he was correct. But you see, up to that time, he didn't really know who he was. He thought he was very poor in algebra. He thought he was just a very poor student. He didn't realize that he was a very special person. And the father himself didn't realize that he was a very special person. You and I oftentimes don't realize that we too are very special people. We too don't realize how wonderful we are and what beautiful beings we are and how we have the ability to draw upon the wisdom that lay within us. But we have to draw upon it. We cannot just say, I know that I know that I know. We have to say it at the time when we need to have the answer. We have to believe in ourselves. You know, all the great teachers throughout all of history have believed in themselves. You say, well, some great God guided them and directed them. That's right. The wisdom within themselves guided and directed them. And you say, well, how can we have that guide and direct us? We're just little people. We're just simple people. And we would like to be guided and directed by the infinite wisdom of all. And how are we guided by that infinite wisdom of all? We're guided by listening within ourselves. Now, this is one of the big problems that we all face. My associate, Ellen Jeremini here, was telling me that she was watching the young people here as they were training. And as they were training with absolute concentration. They would look at their opponent, or they would look at their associate, however they want to call them, and they would train very carefully. They would do everything very carefully. They would be very diligent and very sincere in working with what they were doing. And she said, what sincerity? What wonderful sincerity. Now, do you have that ability? Of course you guys do. You know, you're taking the course here, right? And it works good, doesn't it? Can you concentrate every single time that you're working with somebody? So you're working with somebody, and then your girlfriend comes along, and she comes up and she says, hey! And do you look at her, or do you continue to concentrate on what you're doing? Your attention is drawn away. The better the student that you are in the art that you're being taught here, the more able you are to concentrate on what you're doing and let nothing bother you. But you got to be careful. Swami Rama was with his master in India, and Swami Rama writes in Living with the Himalayan Masters, a book that he has. It's very nicely done. And he's talking about his master. And he was a kid, maybe 14, 10, 12, 14 years old. And as he was working with his master had them meditate, had them quietly sit in meditation, because that's a very, very necessary thing to learn, the concentration and meditation. And so then he kept the kids awake with a little, you know, stone on the end of a stick, and so he said, Rama, are you meditating? And what did the Rama say? Yes, master. Was he meditating? No way. If he could be speaking to his master, if he could be recognizing that he was being asked a question, he wasn't meditating, was he? Was he? Not at all. And see, we fool ourselves. We think we're meditating. We think we're in quiet introspection, listening to the divine within ourselves, and wondering why it is we don't get an answer. Now, in my work at the University of Healing, I have a lot of people come to my attention for healing. They have cancer, they have rheumatism and arthritis, they have everything, you name it, and I don't like to name it, but they have everything. And so I say to them, all right, can you become still and concentrate for just a few moments and say, the divine in me is whole and perfect. The divine in me is whole and perfect. Can you say that? Can you say, the divine in me is whole and perfect, and then believe it and be it? And you see, the difficulty is that they have not been taught to be quiet and listen. When you are quiet and listen, then it speaks to you, and it tells you exactly what to do and how to do it. Now, how do you experience wholeness if you're having a cancer situation? That sounds pretty tough, doesn't it? You know, people who have cancer, they're really unhappy about that. Well, for your information, and you already know this, I know, cancer is one cell of the body that didn't get the message of doing what it's supposed to be doing. And it just started growing, 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 expanding in a foolish way. Now, why does this happen? Why is it that anything in our body goes awry? And why does anything in our body not do what it's supposed to be doing? Anything in our body doesn't do what it's supposed to be doing because we haven't learned to be quiet, sit in meditation, and speak to ourselves and say, all is in divine order. All is in divine order. When we learn to say all is in divine order in our body, we don't tell the cancer cells, now just, you know, don't go expanding. Don't start being a whole bunch of cells growing up there and making trouble. All is in divine order. The body begins to recognize that all is in divine order. Now, If you have any problem in your life at all, any upset, anything that makes you feel uncomfortable in any way, what you can do is to begin to say, right now, all is in divine order. All is in divine order. And when you say that, you are saying, I agree that my body was born originally pure and perfect. It is a perfect idea. It's a perfect idea, and it is there for us to really enjoy and really know. Now, are we ready for that? Are we ready to experience this perfection of everything in our mind and our heart and our being? Are we ready? And the answer should be yes. However, if we allow ourselves to think of the negative problem, we empower that. We want to learn to think only of the positive power. If you ever stub your toe, and I know everyone's done that once in a while, the first thing that you want to say is, ouch. Well, you just blew it. The first thing that you should say is, all is in divine order. I'm whole and perfect. I'm whole and perfect. When you say that, then you have no feeling of pain in your toe, and you have no feeling of pain later on ever, because you have spoken your word and said it's whole and perfect. Okay, now, go around stubbing your toe and say, you're whole and perfect, and then have no problem. You say, well, who wants to stub their toe on purpose? You know? Well, if you do it on purpose, then you're ready for it. But if you do it by accident, you might not be ready for it. So when you're stubbing your toe by accident, you've got to be ready. All is in divine order right now. All is perfect right now. I'm whole and perfect right now. I'm whole and perfect right now. My son was 18, I guess, something like that. And we were driving our motorhome downtown San Diego. We were going to a nice vegetarian restaurant down there that he liked. And so we were driving around looking for a parking space. And so he went out to go to the restaurant and sign us up and get us a seat in the restaurant. Well, we drove around with my motorhome, finally we were finding a place, and then I saw a bump under some things in the parking lot of the filling station. And I felt something. So I pulled off, went over there, it's my son. He had been running through the service station, and it was greasy, and he had slipped on the concrete and plunged like that with his head down on the concrete. That's tough. And so I stopped the motorhome, jumped out, and ran over there. I knew, but I didn't know. And pulled the mat aside, and there he was. I said, Mark, you're home perfect. 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 I just spoke to him, you're whole and perfect. You're whole and perfect with all my heart, with all my soul. That's my son. You know what I mean? That's my son. Now, is your body equally important to you? Well, anyhow, I said, you're whole and perfect, you're whole and perfect, you're whole and perfect. And he came out of his coma, I know, Dad, I'm whole and perfect. And then he went back. And that happened to him twice. The police emergency came, and they picked him up and took him to the hospital. And I took my motor home, and I beat the police to the hospital and got in the parking lot and then ran up there. And it was in the evening, in the emergency ward. And so then they took him in. They wanted to take an x-ray of his head. And they took an x-ray, and they said to me, looks like there might be something. You're home perfect, Mark. You're home perfect, Mark. You're home perfect, Mark. And his friends who were with me, they were saying, you're home perfect, Mark. You're home perfect. And so then we said, he's home perfect. We weren't going to believe what the x-ray said. And then finally they said, well, we have no technician here. We need you to hold his head firm while we're doing the x-ray in the big x-ray room, you know. So they took him into the big x-ray room, and I held his head rock firm. I mean, I'm his dad, you know. And so I held it rock firm, and they took a picture, and there was nothing wrong. Nothing wrong. You're whole and perfect. And then they said, that's right, there's nothing wrong. He's okay. Kind of a shock. But we're going to keep him overnight. And so they kept him overnight, and we parked in the parking lot. In the morning, I went in with his friends, and we went to his room, and he was having breakfast. And I said, Mark, you're home perfect. You're home perfect. He said, I know, Dad, I know. And the hospital says, you're home perfect. Yeah, I know. And so they released him, and we went to the motorhome. Big, 30-foot motorhome that we had then. And it was a really neat one. And Mark said, "Dad, I'm driving." You know, so he just had this apparent concussion or apparent problem. He said, "I'm driving." Well, now, if I believe that he's whole and perfect, I have to let him drive, right? Mm-hmm. I have to let him drive. I have to believe 100%. And I believed 100%. I tell you I did. Mm-hmm. And I do. And he drove perfect. Ever since then, he's been building ultralight airplanes and flying them all over the United States and the world and selling them everywhere and just having a great time. And he's now 51 years old. But you see, when you believe, when you take a principle and you stand by that principle, and you stand by that principle regardless of the appearances, you know, the appearances that were, he might have bumped his head good, you know, but no way. But then you have to also follow through on the principle as it goes to the next step and the next step. If a person has just had a concussion or injured their head, you don't let them drive because they could, you know, have anything happen. But no, I believed in him 100%, and he had no problem. Do you believe 100%? Now, as I said, we have many people coming to us for healing needs. And so I say to them, all right, now, the first thing I want you to do is to meditate. Meditate, yuck, you know, who needs meditation? You say you meditate, and you here in your group here, I'm sure you do a lot of meditating too. But what does meditation mean? Meditation means to think about. So I want you to become quiet and think about, if you're looking for a healing need, think about your perfect body. Your body was designed by a perfect God. Does God make mistakes? I haven't heard of any. Does God make mistakes? God don't make mistakes. So God designed you and me and all of us absolutely perfect. The only thing is, we sometimes don't believe that. And so we sometimes say, I'm stupid. We sometimes say, I'm sick. We sometimes say, I have problems. I'm poor. You know? We say these things and we empower these things. So let's say the truth about ourselves. Everything that God has created is good and absolutely good. So now we say, I meditate. I meditate on being whole and perfect. All right? So you become quiet, you become peaceful, and you listen within. You listen quietly within. You say, I'm whole and perfect, I'm whole and perfect, I'm whole and perfect. And then you listen, and you listen, and you listen. And as you listen, you get goosebumps all over your body. In good meditation, you just are alive with the feeling of being connected to your divinity. You're alive with the feeling that you are a fabulous, wonderful being, that everything is, wow, good and glorious. And you say, I'm whole and perfect, if that's your choice. I'm whole and perfect, I'm whole and perfect. And we've had people come to us who were not appearing to be whole and perfect. And they said, but what about this? I said, that's an appearance. Today, I throw a bottle of water on you, you're all wet. 2 seconds later, in the sun, you're all dry. Why aren't you still all wet? Because that's an appearance that you're wet. It's an appearance that you're dry. It's an appearance that your body is today. Today, he's a young man. Tomorrow, he's a mature young man, right? Yes. And what are you going to have tomorrow? Today, you have a mommy and daddy. Maybe, yeah. And tomorrow, you're going to have maybe a wife, yeah? Maybe. And some kids, maybe. And you're going to have no kids. And you're going to have a job, right? And you're going to own a company. And you're going to become the chief executive officer of the company. And you're going to make yourself $1 million a year. Is that a good start? Good start, right? Now, you say, oh, that's a joke. That's silly talk. But the illusion of him today as a child, and tomorrow as an adult, and tomorrow as a company executive with a high-fluting job, you know, our women in the United States are so silly. For years, they've gone around thinking that men were superior. And then all of a sudden, somebody said to one of the women, look, if you're so smart, you run the company. They said, okay. and they run the company, and the company becomes extremely successful. My niece works for a cannery in Dover, Delaware, and as she was working for this cannery, she was a computer expert. Well, she was working for the company for about 6 months, and then the boss died. Stupid thing to do, but he died. And his wife was left with the company. It was a several million dollar a year product company, and oysters or clams or something like that, and it was very good. And so the woman said, "My God, I don't know anything. I've never been down to the office hardly, you know." So she went down to the office and she talked to the executives there. And when she talked to the executives, she got the feeling of them. Some said, "Go home, lady." And so she called each one into her office separately and talked to them. And then she picked out three people that she felt were the people who really made the place go. And she separately sat with each one for a week. And at the end of 3 weeks, she came to the office and she says, "I am taking over as boss. I don't know what doesn't make the company work, but I do know what does make the company work, listening to the divine inside myself." And she listened to the divine within herself. And within 1 year, she doubled the income of that company in 1 year because she was too stupid. She didn't know she shouldn't do certain things. But she went by the guidance of her chief executive officers in there who told her what to do and how to do it, and she used her own judgment too, you know. And then the next year, it again doubled. And my niece Kathy said, "Wow, what a woman." Now, she had no idea she could run a company. She had no idea. She was such a genius. She had no idea the divine in her was going to give her the opportunity to be the boss, you know. She didn't know her husband was going to die. It was kind of a shock and surprise. But she believed in herself. When we start believing in ourselves, healings take place in our life. When we start believing in ourselves, we start accomplishing great things. But we can only do that by believing in ourselves, by listening to ourselves. How many of you have ever heard within yourself that you're a nice person? Did your inner self ever say you're a nice person? It says it often, doesn't it? Yeah. And you too, Ellie. It says it often, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. Now, why does it say that you're a nice person? Because that's you talking. That's you talking. Your divine self is you talking. And begin to listen to this and begin to follow this and begin to realize that this is going to change your whole life if you start putting this cause in motion in a positive way. Are you ready for this experience in your life? Are you ready to be master of yourself? Now, the Dalai Lama is traveling the world sharing the idea of wisdom and goodness and peace. And what is he saying to all the people? If you were ever to hear him, I don't know if you had the privilege, but if you were ever to hear him or read his books, he's written several good ones, you will find that he says, "Be yourself and have fun. Always have what on your face? A smile." That's what he says. Always have a smile on your face. And he says this to all of his people. He got kicked out of his country. He lost his great temple in which he had been conducting his activities and his organization was for years and years and years. Many years. Did that destroy him? It enhanced him. It gave him an inner power to go out and do many more beautiful things. Before, he remained in the lamasery by himself, so to speak, and his people. And they grew and they expanded lovely. Now he's walking to the heads of all the nations of the earth and spending time with them. Now, when have you recently heard of a Buddhist master, whatever terms we're going to give to him, having not only an audience with the Pope, but sharing ideas with the Pope. Not bad, huh? Not bad. Maybe the Pope will wake up. What do you think? It might be a good idea. But you see, and how about all the other great religious leaders of the world? He meets with them. And he goes to the President of the United States. He goes to England. He goes to wherever. You name the country, and he's been there by invitation. They know a peaceful mind. They know a peaceful heart. They know a master when they see it. And they called him into their presence. Nice, huh? You going to have a meeting with him too one day? Why not, huh? Why not? It'd be a beautiful experience. I've had meetings with many of these lovely people over my lifetime, and I tell you, it's not humiliating, it's a humbling, it's a humbling experience to be in the presence of such illumined beings. And what do you do when you're in the presence of an illumined being? You become silent. You meditate. When you're in the presence of an illumined being, you don't tell the illumined being that his zipper is down. You don't tell him he forgot to tie his shoelace. You don't tell him that he's got schnitter on his nose, do you? Do you? If you ever do this to anybody, you don't know it. But every being that you're in the presence of is divine. Every being you're in the presence of is a master. And if you ever feel you're going to tell a master how to correct himself, you better think twice. Not because you're telling a master this, but because that's what you see. If you see the Dalai Lama with his nose running, you got a problem. When you see the Dalai Lama as a spiritually illumined being, wow, that's what you are. If you see him with his nose running, that's what you are. Do you understand what I'm saying? Very simple ideas, very simple terms. Now, how can you know your own divine self? You don't go to your own divine self and say, look, divine self, I got a cold. I got cancer. I got a problem. Divine self, now what do I do here? Here I got this stuff. And the divine self says, what do you want from me? I am pure. I am perfect. I am divine. I am wonderful. What do you want from me? If you bring me a cold, I say, a cold is a divine idea. Everything is divine. Everything. But some are beneficial and some are not beneficial. What beneficial response do you want from me, the divine in you says? And you say, well, I am whole and perfect. Hey, that's cool. I have a beautiful body. My body is wonderful. Every organ, action, and function of my body is wonderful. I feel fantastic. And the divine in you will say, wow, you are certainly an illumined being, because that's who your divine self is. Your divine self is whole and perfect. Your divine self is fantastic. Now, how do we keep our attention on this? When we might have cancer, we might have a cold, we might have a problem. How do we keep our attention on the fact that we are illumined divine beings? If you see the Dalai Lama with a runny nose, you haven't got your attention on his divinity. When you look at his eyes and you see the sparkle in his eyes, when you see the spiritual illumination emanating from his eyes and from the eyes of any illumined master, you feel 10 feet tall, if I can use that term. You feel fantastic. You feel glorious. And you cannot see that they have a runny nose. And they don't either. But you cannot see that. You cannot see a fault in them. When you see their beauty, their divinity, when you see their wholeness, when you see what they really are. Are you ready for that? Are you ready to see everything in the world divine and beautiful? You have your symbols here, the symbols of the Buddha. You have your symbols of Christianity. You have your symbols of Zarathustra. You have your symbols of Lao Tse and Confucius. You have your symbols of all these great masters who have come down through time.
And who are those people? Who are those people? Those people are you. Those people are you. Tomorrow, you may be an illumined one by awareness. Today, you are illumined because I see you illumined. So therefore, I'm illumined. You like that? That's nice, huh? Right? Do I see you illumined? Yes, I like that smile. Do I see you illumined? Well, let's be a little more enthusiastic about it. Yes, 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 yes. And Ellen, do I see you illumined?
Yes.
And sir, do I see you illumined? Do you have emanating from your eyes the intensity of the brilliance of the Buddha within you? Are you the living expression of divinity? Fabulous. You too?
Yes, I am.
And you? And I've already gotten it from you, haven't I? You know it, don't you? And you love it, don't you? Ooh, me too. And you? Are you the greatest, most beautiful expression of the divine that ever walked the face of the earth? Yes, yes, yes. Because I see you that way. So you have to be that way for me. Now, when you see me that way, then that's what you see of yourself, because I am your mirror. And the world is our mirror. Whatever we see in the world, it is us. Do you see your divinity? Do you see the goodness in you?
I'm not sure.
Pretty much so. I would work on that until you said yes. But pretty much so is a good start. And why is pretty much so a good start? Because she is coming into an awareness saying, this is a new approach to look at this stuff here. It sounds pretty good to me. Could you take over a company and run it if emergency happened like that and make it a success? Yes. Now, why do you think you could do that? Because you're brilliant. Because you're unlimited, right? Because you're divine. Ah, yes. And you see what I mean? There's no limit when you listen to the divine within you. And what about you? It'd be easy, wouldn't it? Yeah, yeah. Do you like the games you're playing here and that you're learning? And why do you like them? What do they teach you? They teach you that you can do what? A non-aggressive awareness of the magnificence within you, and that you flow in movements with the other people that you're working with, right? And do they ever hurt you? Would they ever want to hurt you? Are you moving with them and flowing with them as a beautiful expression of a divine idea? Yeah, pretty nice, isn't it? And you? Could you take over a company instantly like that and be a success because you believe in yourself? Give me a chance, huh? Yes, you know it. You see, you have within you all power. You have within you all ability to do anything because you're divine. You have that God self in you just waiting to express itself. And when you let it go, wow! And this guy here, do you think that he's a divine being?
Yeah.
Do you think that he's a master?
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you ever looked into his eyes?
Yeah.
What do you see when you look in his eyes? You see magic, don't you? You see sparkling lights. You see the emanence of rays of charm and beauty and wholeness. You see above all those things, what?
Purity.
Purity?
Peace. Absolutely.
Peace. No. Absolute peace.
Yes, yes.
Now you see, that man is going to walk through life as the Dalai Lama,
yeah,
a peacemaker. Yeah. And wherever he goes, he's going to leave a trail of peace behind him. Everybody is going to feel wonderful. If he could walk into the great governing power meetings of the world, and just stand there and shed his light of peace over them, all the governing powers of the world would say, what are we arguing about? Let's cooperate. Let's work these things out on the drawing board here. We don't need to have the war table, right? We don't need to have the guns. We don't need to have any of these things. Let's work it out right on the drawing table. And what would happen then? I was telling a story the other day that these two countries were having their discoveries with each other, and one country had a lake, big lake, and on the other side of the lake they had maybe about 100,000 acres of land, and they couldn't service that land very well. But the country that was adjacent to them could service that land very well, because that country was servicing in that area. And so the president of this country went to the other country and said, if the people in that portion of land desire to annex to your country, would you like to annex them? And the guy says, sure. Why not? Yeah, sure. And why are you so generous? And the leader of the country said, because my desire is for the good of the people. And we cannot begin to service those people the way we serve the rest of our country, because that lake is in the way. We cannot bring them sewers. We cannot bring them all the things that they would like to have and all the benefits, whereas your country is right there with them and could do it. Hey, that's all right. Maybe I got a few corners of the country that I could share with other countries where the people could be served better. Wow, imagine a government interested in serving the people. A government interested in on the behalf of the people, what is best for the people? Isn't that a lovely thought? Now, why not? Why not? And this crazy land of Mexico, you've heard of Mexico, haven't you? It's the most interesting place in the world. Mexico has a government, like every country has a government, and the government likes to fill their pockets with the good that the government brings in. And so what happens? The people don't get the benefits. The people don't get the schools, the roads, and the things they have. Now, if we were to annex Mexico to the United States, then Mexico would have everything the United States has, and we would be putting beautiful freeways through their country and messing it up terribly, and we would be utilizing their country. But no. We don't want to think that way. If we think the United States should take over Mexico, we are sort of silly, aren't we? What we should do is we should speak our word, and we should say, I see Mexico operated by legislators who are interested in the Mexican government, by legislators who are interested in the Mexican people, by legislators who want to take every single penny the country can bring in and turn it around to be used for the people. I see the Mexican government being stable and other companies coming in and running the gold mines and the oil fields and the coal mines and all of the other manufacturing plants, making Mexico into one of the greatest diplomatic and legal countries in the world, no longer a third world country, but a first world nation. Now, how do we do that? We do that by going through Mexico and teaching all the Mexicans this song. It's a very lovely song. I'll sing it for you. And it goes like this. Have the Mexican people sing the song. I bless Mexico, land that I love. I stand beside her and guide her through the night with the light from within. From the mountains to the valleys to the oceans white with foam, I bless Mexico, my home, sweet home. I bless Mexico, my home, sweet home. You see, if they would begin to delight in their government, to delight in their country, to delight in everything that they have, their country would start being a wonderful country. We go to Nigeria and Ghana and Australia, New Zealand, and you name the countries around the world. And Ellen and I go in and teach them these songs. And we teach these kids. We go to the elementary schools, and by the thousands, they're all there, and they come out and they sing with us. And their parents are running the country. Their parents are running their countries. And so we teach them, I bless Nigeria, land that I love. And then they put us on television and they put us on the radio because they want to hear, they want to have this concept brought across to the people and to the government. We were in Australia a few years ago, and when we came into the country, the newspapers were all saying, the government is terrible, the government is terrible, the dollar is down, the dollar is down, the government is terrible, the government is terrible. And so we spoke to the Theosophical Societies and the other organizations and churches and the universities and stuff, and we said to them, you know, you people are very silly. You're putting down your government, you're putting down your dollar, you're telling the world that you're an unstable country. Start saying that the dollar in Australia is stable and up, and that our governmental leaders are positive, dynamic leaders. And we went around for 3 weeks in Australia teaching the people these things along with other positive ideas. And at the time that we left the country, the dollar was up and the government was in higher esteem once again. Not because what we did, we planted the seed, but because the people themselves changed their thinking about their government and about their money. Now, if this can be done so quickly and so rapidly as it is in a nation, think what can happen in your body when you start saying, my body is whole and perfect. My body is a temple of the living spirit. Every organ, action, and function of my body is whole and perfect right now. Think what can happen when you start saying that. Or I know that I know that I know the divine in me knows the answer to any test, any questions that I'm doing in school. You know, education is kind of an interesting thing. Education is not what you think it is. Normally, we think that education is somebody taking information and cramming it into us, right? What are you shaking your head yes for? I'm not agreeing with that. That's what we think. We think that people just cram information into our heads. You know, 2 times 2 is 2, 2 times 2 is 2, 2, that's wrong. 2 times 2 is 4, 2 times 2, see, if you get the wrong point there, you get really in trouble. So what you do is you do what? You change your attitude of education. Education is revealing to you that you already know everything. Where do the scientists get their great concepts about the Big Bang Theory? Where do they get their great concepts about age, that there is nothing in the human body that wants to grow old? Nothing. Everything wants to remain young forever. Nothing wants to grow old. But we tell us that we want to grow old. We say, I'm 10, 20, 30, 50, 100 years old, you know? 100 years is going the right direction, you know. But we say that. And so then our body responds to that. When you tell your body that you are old, when you tell your body that you are sick and you are not doing very well, then your body says, okay, I thought I was whole and perfect, but if you want to have me be the other way, that's okay. You see, that's the law of cause and effect. Whatever cause we put in motion, then the law carries that out. The law doesn't care. It carries it out very beautifully. Now, what sort of a cause are you going to put in motion? Are you going to put in motion the cause that you know all things? That you are revealing the knowledge that is within you? Because that's what you're doing. The scientists are revealing the knowledge. Where was the book that was written about the Big Bang Theory before the Big Bang Theory was written about? It was inside of somebody's head. It was never in a book. He had never been taught that. He had never learned that. Where did he learn it? Somebody had it in their head and they brought it out. Now, they are taking fruit flies and they are making them live 15 to 30
additional lifetimes. Lifetimes. And they are taking mice, and they are giving them a starvation diet, and they are letting them live 3 to 4 times their normal lifetime, sometimes 6 times of normal lifetime. You see, in our mind is all this knowledge, is all this awareness. We want to just open ourselves to it and be creative and reveal all that magnificence that is, that's within us, all this, this genius that's within us just waiting to come forth. Now, the reason we're not doing it is we don't believe in ourselves. And we don't believe in ourselves because we haven't learned to listen. We haven't learned to listen. I say to you, tell me the your mother's middle name.
Yes.
Yes, right away she tells me. Now, if I would say to her...
It's Kay. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's my middle name.
Oh, 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 oh. You shouldn't have told her the right name, though. But now, do you think she knows? Did you ever hear your mother's middle name? Okay, so you see, you do know it. Now, what if you had never heard it? What if I asked you your grandmother's middle name? You'd say, well, that's another thought. And now I go to Rhonda over here. I say, Rhonda, tell me what you don't know. And so Rhonda would say, well, in what area? And so Rhonda is talking, you were telling us a thing just today. What were you saying about something that, you knew intuitively? What did you know intuitively? You knew intuitively this man's wife's name.
Oh.
Oh.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And how did you know intuitively that man's wife's name?
I just knew.
Because you knew. You see, she has this all knowledge within her, and she listened, and she knew, and she believed. And because she listened, and she knew, and she believed, it was revealed to her. Now, she had never met the guy before. She had never had any idea of what it was. And so she just knew and she believed and she listened and she followed. And when she did that, she came up with the right answer. And the guy says, yeah, how did you know that? Now, you see, inside of us is all knowledge. You say, well, that was just a lucky guess. Yeah. No. No. That wasn't just a lucky guess. She listened intuitively within herself. And she heard within herself what it was that she was interested in knowing. And this is what all of us can do. We can listen intuitively within ourselves and know what is being done, if we wish. Now, how can we teach ourselves to listen intuitively? There's a school that teaches this. And that school is called the School of Myself. It's within each one of us. Now, the admission to get into that school is a peaceful heart, a quiet heart. So if you can become peaceful and quiet and listen within, you will have revealed to yourself some wonderful things. Now, I want you to tell me in 2 seconds what you're going to be when you're 35 years old. You're going to be what? Say it louder so I can hear.
A teacher?
You're going to be a teacher when you're 35 years old. Well, now, what makes him think that he is so good that he can be a teacher when he's 35 years old, huh? She, excuse me. What makes, that's where I had my trouble. What makes her think that she is so good that she knows she's going to be a teacher when she's 35? Well, she has listened within her heart. And within her heart is the joy of sharing, of teaching, of revealing to students. In her heart is the joy of giving and being. Now, how did she get that way? She just listened. She just listened. And she listens every once in a while. Now, do people come up to you with questions that you should not know the answer to, but you know the answer to it? Probably quite often. And you just say to them, well, this is the answer. They say, well, how'd you know that? And you say, well, I just know. Now, she doesn't have an idea in mind of what that was, nor do I. But the thing is, we have those things happen to us. And we know. Now, does every kid who wants to be an astronaut become an astronaut? No. Why? Because they don't really want to become an astronaut. That's just something exciting. That's just something that sounds like it'd be a great experience to go through, to be an astronaut. What do they really want to do? They want to be a vital, dynamic, exciting individual. They want to be a vital, dynamic, exciting individual. When people are interested in sports, when people are interested in skydiving, when people are interested in horseback racing or horseback riding or anything, and I don't just mean in sports alone, but when they're interested in something that turns their mind on, that gets them excited, do you know what they found? Those people live a healthier, longer life than anyone else. The people who just take the humdrum, ordinary things, that no excitement to it, they live very short lives because they have no excitement in their life. They have no enthusiasm in their life. They have no joy in their life. And this is something that we all want to develop. So when we can meditate, that's a quiet time. When we can enjoy exciting things, that's having the enthusiasm for living. When we can listen within and hear, all the doorways open up for us for every possibility we could ever want in life. Each one of you have that great opportunity. Now, our first four points we were making here, who am I? How did I get to be me? What choice do I have a right to make? And how long does it take to experience my choices? Well, now, how long does it take to make my choices? How long does it take to make contact? The length of time it takes to make contact is the seriousness of what we are and what we're doing. Now, when this kid gets in there and begins to make his movements with the others, if he is paying any attention to the others, he will not succeed. If he only pays attention to himself and what his movements are, perhaps in relation to where their hands are, but what his movements are, only to himself he pays attention, he will be a winner every time. He will be a magic student. What are the masters of these arts? The masters of these arts, they could be 10 years old or 100 years old, right? Are they in any way inhibited by age or by lack of it or by the abundance of it? No. They are like a smoothly oiled machine. They work harmoniously, joyously, abundantly. They are masters. And because they are masters, they accomplish their goal. And how long does it take them to be a master? How long does it take you to concentrate? Snap your finger, right? And when you don't concentrate, that's a snap of your finger too, isn't it? Yeah. So when you can take the ability to concentrate, the ability to be one-pointed, you can accomplish any goal in your life. When you can be one-pointed, this is something that they don't teach in schools. If you can be one-pointed, now you see, he's out here learning this, do you call it a martial art? He's learning this martial art, and he's learning this martial art of an aggressiveness toward one another, of the movement of the hands and the body, and in relationship to the other. If he is doing this, because he is an aggressive person, he can be beat. If he is doing this because he is pure love, totally concentrating on what he's doing, in a snap, he will be the master. Now, that's all it takes. But it takes it on a continual basis, every single moment, for however long you're doing whatever you're doing. Now, if you have cancer, if you can, every moment that you are thinking about your whole body, think, my body is whole and perfect now, my body is whole and perfect now, my body is whole, and believe that and know that, you will experience it like this. Like that. Many people go to these charismatic evangelistic healers like Catherine Kuhlman and many others. Catherine's now gone. But they would come up and fill the Shriner Auditorium with 5,000 people, and they would come up to her, and she would say to them as she put her hand on their forehead, in the name of Jesus, you're healed. And virtually every one of them would drop their crutches, would drop their problems, would stand up straight, would be completely released of their problem. And some permanently, most of them would fall back on it. Now, why did they fall back on it? You want to tell me? What did they forget to do? They forgot to concentrate, huh? They forgot to concentrate on what they were doing. That's why when Jesus said to people, go and tell no one, go and tell, and then they went out and told, poof, they had their problem back. But it's not a matter that telling somebody makes your problem come back. But they say, before I was blind, now I can see. But they put the before I was blind, you know, and people say, well, you're still blind, you know. Well, that's a silly thing. When we learn to concentrate 100% totally in whatever it is that we're doing, when we learn to stay with it day after day, minute after minute, hour after hour, second after second, then we get the great result. You are a man, right? You're a boy, right? How old are you? 21. You're a man. Don't go kidding me. All right, you're a man. Now, you're a woman.
Nope.
You have no problem with that, do you?
No.
That doesn't mean a thing to you. I can tell you, you're a woman all day long, and you'll say, it's okay, kid, you got a problem. You got the problem, you know. And you see, he knows who he is. I cannot tell him that he is a woman, because he knows he's a man. And he knows he's 21, and he knows that's a wonderful age. A very special, wonderful age. And he knows that he is fantastic. He knows that he is great. He knows that he is magnificent. He knows that he's the greatest. Now, if I were to come along and say to him, you're bad, you're bad, you're bad, you don't know, you're bad, you're bad, you're bad, and he would start believing me, then he would start not being the man that he is. He would start being a weakling. He would start being bad. If he started believing me, if he didn't pay any attention, why would he create me telling him he's bad? That'd be stupid, wouldn't it? But if he did, and he believed it, all the fact that he is a man, he's 21, he's great, he's fantastic, would be gone down the drain. Because he did not hold true to the truth about himself. You know? And if he holds true to the truth about himself, whatever he believes about himself, he is that right now. He is the master right now. And you too? Are you the master right now of what your beliefs are? Are you going to school and studying teaching? Not yet. But you're going to, huh? And do you think you'll be a good teacher? What will make you a good teacher? What are you doing as a teacher? Are you teaching students, or are you teaching students to love themselves? To love themselves so that they will be receptive to all the knowledge that's within them. You see, a real teacher teaches a student to have self-confidence in themselves, right? Isn't that what you teach your kids in there? To have self-confidence in themselves?
I don't teach the kids here, but yes, sure.
Yeah. And when they have self-confidence in themselves, they're winners. You see, when we can teach young people and older people, like all of us in here, to have self-confidence in ourselves, we can accomplish anything. So really, wouldn't that be great if our teaching schools of teaching teachers would teach teachers how to teach self-confidence in the student? Wow. This is why this martial arts study here, it teaches the students how to have self-confidence in themselves, to believe in themselves, to stand for themselves and be themselves and do it. And they do it. They do it, right? And when they do it, what happens? They feel wonderful. They feel that they're the master. They feel they're in control. They feel that anything is possible for them. Any dream that you have, right? It opens up a whole new way of looking at things, doesn't it? How long have you been studying the art?
Probably about 6 months.
I didn't hear you.
6 months.
6 months? And what have you learned in 6 months? Have you learned self-confidence?
Yes.
And do you feel very good about yourself?
Mm-hmm.
You bet. And you? How long have you been studying it? You don't know how long you've been studying it? Let's say about 2 or 3 months. A week?
A year.
A year, right?
Yeah,
you got this wonderful outfit on here, and it fits you. You must be in this for a long while. But that's great. But now, why is he so attentive here to our talk today? Because he knows how to be a master. Oh, he's here with somebody else?
No, you asked that question. I thought you were really asking, so I said, because you're a good teacher. That's why he's listening.
So, what we want to do... I'm sorry?
He said he stays here because you are a good teacher.
Wise man. And that's good, too. But wise man. But, you see, this is the point. When you find someone who inspires you, remember, let them inspire you, but do not become their follower. If you become anybody's follower, you're not leading yourself, and you want to lead yourself. He teaches you an art. You learn an art. You take that art and you use it in your everyday life as a master. If you're going to go around and say that the Buddha is my master, and the Swami Rama is my master, and Babaji and all these other people are my master, and Jesus is my master, that's not what it's all about. That's not what it's all about. They are teaching you to be the master of yourself, because the day comes when they must leave you. The day comes when they must go and do whatever is their thing to do, and for you to go on from there. And just because they go, just because they die, doesn't mean they don't love you and that they are just abandoning you. They leave you when you're ready to go on without their help, because you are now master within. You can be very great. You can be very wonderful. You can be very stupendous. But the way to become even more stupendous is by learning to listen within. To meditate and listen within. We have 104 acres up on the mountain in Southern California. And every morning I walk around the 104 acres and I meditate and I speak my positive word about beautiful things and beautiful ideas. And as I do these things, I just feel goosebumps all over me. I just feel wonderful. And I say, I'm spiritually illumined. I'm spiritually illumined. I'm spiritually illumined. And when I say I'm spiritually illumined, beautiful ideas flow through my mind. Beautiful concepts come into my attention. Beautiful thoughts come to me and say, hey, that's great. That's wonderful. That's fantastic. That's just what we want to know more about. That is beautiful. And you see, when these things happen to you, then is the time for you, not necessarily to have a pad of paper and write down the thoughts that come to you, but continue to be open. Continue to be open. Stop and think about it. You know the story of the life of the Buddha. Did the Buddha ever write down a teaching? No. Did he ever write down anything? No. Where did the teachings of the Buddha come from? His followers. Is it a good and a sincere and a clear
representation of what he taught? Probably not, but it was interesting. Did Jesus ever write anything? No. Did Lao Tse ever write anything? No. Tai Ching, Confucius, he wrote. But he wrote different than any of the others, and his whole purpose was quite different. But you see, most great teachers, most great leaders of philosophical thought, of religious thought, did not write. They did not write down. They just lived their life, and people wrote down what they interpreted them as being. Sai Baba in India. People have told me that Sai Baba said this and Sai Baba said that. And I said, no, he didn't. I said, if you think the Sai Baba said those things, where'd you get the idea? Well, I was at his lecture. Well, did you ever read any books that were written about what he said? No. And I said, well, read one. Well, I got one right here. I said, well, open it up. Just open it. And Sai Baba says, you all think that I am God. Well, I am. And so are you. But you don't know it. You know, this is what he says very clearly. And he says it on virtually any page you want to accidentally open it up to. And you go to any great philosophical teacher, and they all say the same thing, that you are divine, that you are the creative cause of your universe, that you are the one who puts the cause in motion for whatever it is you want to experience. Now, what do you want to experience in your life? Let's go back to healing. I have people coming to the campus, and one woman came to the campus, and she had cancer, and she was very seriously ill with it. And I said to her, I will work with you, but you have to do everything I tell you to do. And so she said, oh, yes, 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 yes. And I said, the first thing is, you say, I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. I'm whole and perfect. I'm whole and perfect. I'm whole and perfect. Do not allow yourself the privilege of one thought saying that you have cancer. As far as you're concerned, cancer is the farthest thing from your mind. Now, I want you to act as though you are whole and perfect. I want you to go out there and lift that barge and tote that bale. I want you to get out there, and I want you to drive the golf carts around on the campus. I want you to go walking around on the meditation trails. I want you to take your stones and pile them along your pathway and do all these things. I want you to go out there and meditate and meditate and meditate and meditate and think about how perfect you are. Think about how divine you are. She said, well, but I'll hurt. I said, no, no. Think about how whole and perfect you are and how divine you are and how whole and perfect you are. Just think about it. You do it. She said, well, you could lay your hand on me and I'd be whole and perfect. And I said, yes, and then next time you have a problem, you come back again. You do it for yourself. You heal yourself. It's the only healing that is everlasting healing is when we do it for ourselves. So, she went out and did these things. And she took a half a mile of path, putting little stones, not, you know, every 6 inches. She put them right tight up against each other. That's a lot of stones. And she just had a wonderful time. And she came in, she was brown as a bear, and happy as a lark, drinking lots of water, feeling wonderful. And at the end of 1 week, she had to go home shortly there. At the end of 1 week, she had still two problems, not the cancer anymore. She had two problems. And I said, you would be wise to stay and do this little duty for yourself and clear up those other two problems too. She didn't do it. And she went home. Her doctors confirmed that she no longer had cancer, but she had these other two problems and she had to live with them. Now, I don't tell you what those other two problems are because they know about this lady and they don't know that she has these other two problems. And so I don't give them any power. But they also know that she had the cancer when she came there and didn't when she left. And this is the beautiful thing. Now, I didn't heal her. I was the catalyst to putting her to work and putting the cause in motion. And when she put that cause in motion, she had this healing experience. Now, you can have a healing experience in your mind relative to your work, relative to your life, relative to anything you do. Now, Tony was asking me the other day, he says, is it wrong to be a bartender? Is it wrong to sell liquor? Is it wrong to eat meat? Is it wrong to do any of those things? Now, those are questions that many people ask. And yes, it is absolutely 100% wrong if you believe it's wrong. Remember that. If you believe it's wrong. If you don't believe it's wrong, it's not wrong for you. But if, remember this now, if ever you ask the question, what is the answer?
No.
The answer is no. Is it wrong to smoke? No. Is it beneficial to smoke? No. Is it wrong to drink? No. Is it beneficial to drink? No. Is it wrong to eat meat? No. Is it beneficial to eat meat? No. Is it wrong to do anything? No. Is it beneficial? You see, there is no right and wrong in the principle. There is no right and wrong in the law of cause and effect. But things are beneficial or not beneficial. Is it wrong for me to cut my fingers off? No. Is it beneficial?
No.
Not at all. You know, I like my fingers. I'm a computer whiz and so forth. But you can probably notice my little black and blue marks here from my golden retriever. He's always saying, hi, Dad, how you doing? You know, and petting me on my arms there. And when he pulls his paw back on his paw, it gets real crispy there. And he scratches me. And I say, oh, Rex, play it a little more gentle. Well, Dad, put on a long-sleeved shirt so we can play together. You know, dogs are like that, aren't they? And is he a lover? Is he a lover? Yes. He's a big lover. And are we lovers? Yes. Now, the next question is, do you love your mind? Do you love your mind, Anthony? The answer is yes.
Okay, yes.
Okay, yes. Do you love your mind? Yes. And then, if you love your mind, why would you ever put garbage into it? Why would you ever watch a thriller movie which made you frightened? Or if you watch the thriller movie one time, two times, three times, four times, and pretty soon you think that's okay to do, you know? The more often you watch a bad movie, so to speak, the more often, the stronger you have the feeling it's okay to do what that bad movie says. And so don't watch it the first time. But if you hear bad words and other people are swearing and you don't say, stop swearing, you just say to yourself, what a beautiful day, and you don't listen to those things. Now, you don't create people swearing in your presence. You don't create people showing bad movies in your presence. One lady was telling me that in the evening her husband enjoys cowboy movies. And these movies have the shoot 'em up bang stuff sort of, you know, and kind of rough. And she wants to go to bed in peace and quietness. And so what she does, she puts a pillow around her ears and she says, I am peaceful, I am peaceful, I am peaceful, I am at peace. All is in divine order, I am at peace. And she doesn't hear the cowboy show. But what is she doing? She is saying, I am at peace. She is putting a cause in motion of being at peace. Now, if she did not hear that cowboy show that she didn't want to hear, she wouldn't put the pillow over her ears so that she wouldn't hear it, so she could say, I am peace, right? Now you see, sometimes they might have meant it for evil, so to speak, but God meant it for good. So here she has the opportunity, forcefully reminding her, to cover up her ears and hear only what she wants and say, all is in divine order, all is in divine order, all is in divine order, you know? So you have the opportunity
of watching movies that are teaching you things that are not what you want, if we ever watch a movie that teaches us about disobeying the law, our television shows are full of that. Our television shows are full of it, of fighting the police, of fighting the sheriffs, of fighting the law enforcement people, you know. And you think, oh boy, they're after the bad guys. Why should we even know about the bad guys? We should always know just about the good guys. And you say, well, that's not being realistic. Okay. Is it realistic for you to be sick or to be well? What? To be well, right? Right? Oh, my goodness sakes. It's realistic for us to be well. Who wants to be sick? Raise your hand. Who wants to be sick? Yeah, nobody. Who wants to be well? All of us, yes. Okay. So we concentrate on being well. Now, do you watch a movie on with good values, on good morals and good virtues and good ways to live your life? That's great. Do you watch movies that teach being how to rob banks and how to shoot people and how to hurt people? My goodness, you would say, who would want to watch movies like that? Well, 90% of our television shows are like that, unfortunately. Even our Discovery shows and these others are like that. And it's unfortunate. But the thing is, you don't have to watch that. Your mind is such a precious vehicle. Your mind is such a precious instrument that you want to put into your mind the most sacred things that you can ever imagine. And the sacred things are that I like me, I believe in me, I'm good, I'm whole and perfect, I'm fantastic, I'm joyous, I'm wonderful. Those are the things we want to put in our mind. Now, how do we put that into our mind? We put it into our mind by our thought, by what we listen to, by the books we read, by the magazines we read. On campus, we don't have any newspapers. We don't have any newspapers delivered. On campus, we don't listen to the radio. On campus, we listen to a video now and then of some uplifting video movie once a week on Saturday. And on campus, we do not watch television. We have 8 television sets. We don't watch them. We have, what do you call these? Discs. We have dishes that receive television. We don't even use them. We use it just for our computers. And we don't do that. Now, on campus, we have the most peaceful environment. Everybody on campus feels like it's just paradise, heaven on earth, because there is no unhappiness. There is no argument. There is no listening to bad stuff. And you say, well, you're not being realistic. Wouldn't it be wonderful if all the world were not realistic? Wouldn't it be wonderful if all the world would just listen to beautiful things? If all the world would just speak to each other in kindness and love and peace? Wouldn't it be wonderful if that happened? Well, it can when it begins with me, when it begins with you. You know, you say, Rhonda, one of her boyfriends, she's got lots of boyfriends, and one of her boyfriends said to her, Rhonda, you have a 14-year-old son, and since you have a 14-year-old son, you should really watch that he doesn't look at pornographic things on television, on his computer, and you should sit, and you should sit with him all the time that he's on the computer to make sure he doesn't bring in any pornographic stuff. And so Rhonda said, do you have any kids? Nope. And so then she went to her son. And she says, Anthony, that's her son's name. She says, Anthony, do you watch pornographic stuff? And he says, no, Mom. And she says, why don't you watch pornographic stuff? He says, Mom, I don't want that in my head. Now, that's his idea. He may have heard me say it at some time, but that's his idea. He doesn't want that in his head. Now, should we trust him? I would. I believe that he doesn't want it in his head. Now, here he is, a kid
who is interested in, what do you call it, music, rock?
Rock, punk.
Rock, punk rock. He wears terrible clothing. His clothes are so tight, you got to stick your leg in there carefully to get it all the way down. He even sews it to make it tighter. And he wears all this stupid stuff that we wouldn't be caught dead in, although in the 70s or 60s they wore that quite commonly. But and he is an absolutely magnificent young man. Just because he has these crazy
outfits
doesn't mean that he's crazy. He is just wearing them because that is the thing that his group are doing. And he plays this music with his instruments and so forth. And he is a very fine young man. No. Why does he be? Why he doesn't watch this bad stuff on the internet? He doesn't watch bad stuff on television. How did he get to be such a fine young man? Because he didn't watch that stuff. Because he is living his life in beautiful upper attitudes of living. He's living with a positive way, and because he's living in this positive way, he will be great. I have a student in Switzerland. He is a very famous man over there. He owns a large manufacturing company and very wealthy, and he's got a daughter and a son. Well, his son, named Pascal, is a great guy. He was 16, 17, and he had been going with his buddies all the time, and, you know, after school they were always having fun, besides which he raised snakes and stuff like that. But he just was a great kid. And then all of a sudden he stopped going out with his buddies. And his dad says, Pascal, how come you're not going out with the guys? Go out with the guys. Okay, Dad. And then he didn't. Pascal, how come you don't go out with the guys? And he didn't. Pascal, how come you don't go out with the guys? Dad, they're on drugs and I don't want to be on drugs. You know, the father was so insensitive to the fact that he had raised a son who didn't want to be on drugs, and here he was encouraging him to go with those kids who were having the problem, which he knew nothing about. He should have believed in his son and believed that his son had the wisdom to do the right thing. It's like most men and women, they do one of the most terrible things in the world they can do. They get married, you know. And before they're married, they believe in each other, they love each other, they trust each other, they have a great time with each other, and the man can go and do whatever he wants to do, and the woman can do whatever she wants to do, and they just have no doubt in each other. And the minute they get married, then she owns him and he owns her, and she's not allowed to go out by herself anytime without getting permission from him because he owns her. And he can't go out without getting permission from her because she owns him. And you see, when that sort of relationship comes up, that's not a marriage, it's a prison sentence. Now, what marriage can be is a place where the man and the wife love each other, enjoy each other. And if it's a true marriage of absolute love, the woman can say, sweetheart, I'm going to be gone for a couple weeks. See you later. And she takes off. He does not ask her where she goes. He does not ask her what she's doing. He knows that everything she does is beautiful and good. There's no reason for her to be any different away from home than she is at home. And if the husband were to say to his wife, well, sweetheart, I'm going to be gone for about a year, and she'll say, okay. And so he's gone for a year, and he comes back, and she says, hi, sweetheart, you know, if she really believes in him. And how'd she get along that year? How'd she pay the bills? How'd she do everything? It always works out. But the point is, did she believe in him that he did nothing naughty? You understand? Did he believe in her that she did nothing naughty? If that's the case, then you have a true marriage, a marriage of love and respect and honor for each other, not possession. And this is how it happens with our children. We should learn to respect and love and honor them and not possess them. Understand that they do have good judgment because we've taught them. They do have good habits. We've taught them. They do have right attitudes of thinking. We've taught them. My son, his mother spent a great deal of time in the hospital while I was growing up. And so he had to spend a lot of time alone. So I taught him that if he can learn to enjoy his own company, he'll be the happiest boy in the world. And so he learned to enjoy his own company. Occasionally he'd have friends over, and that's perfectly fine. But when he had friends over, he always told them what the rules of the house were. And he says, this is what it is, and if you guys don't like it, then you don't have to be here. And at all times, he lived as a gentleman. At all times, he lived with respect. At all times, he's 51 today, and I have never heard him swear. I have never heard him speak badly of another person. I have never heard him put down another person or their idea. I have only heard him be a positive, uplifting, fantastic young man. This is what each of you can expect from yourself and your world. Be positive, uplifting, beautiful people because you believe in one another. Does your dad believe in you? Does your dad believe in you? Does your mom believe in you? What does your mom believe in you? That you're good, and she can trust you at any time, and you could spend night over at your girlfriend's house and she wouldn't even be concerned about it. She knows you'd be the kind of girl that she'd be proud of, right? Is she always proud of you? Are you proud of yourself all the time? Ooh, isn't that neat?
Super.
What, huh?
Super.
What a way to be, huh? What a way to live your life. Do you believe in them?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Unequivocally. Yes. Your mom and dad believe in you? Yes. What do you mean you don't know? I mean, this guy is too much of a realist. He is coming out of another world. You're fantastic. You know that? You're intelligent. You're brilliant. You're a happy guy. Yes, you are. Super guy. And each one of you, you're a good kid too, you know that? You come out of real good stock. Your mother and father are very proud of you. And that's a little while ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
About a few years ago. Why were they proud of you? Because you had principles and you lived by them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why you're in this field here now. Because you have principles and you live by them. Anthony, do you have principles and do you live by them? What sort of principles do you have? Are you believing in the principles of right and justice and peace?
Okay.
That's okay, huh? I'm glad it's okay. And what about you? Do you believe in the principles of harmony and beauty and goodness and abundance and health and right action and truth and love and all that good stuff?
Yeah.
Yes, me too. Me too. That's what I believe. And you? If you had a classroom of children in front of you, what's the first thing that you would say to them as you were introducing yourself as their teacher? What's the first thing that you'd say to them? Would you say, I love you? Good morning, class. I love you. I'm expecting us to have a great time together learning and sharing. You want to teach any particular grade level? Just teach, huh?
She wants to teach Kung Fu?
Kung Fu. Kung Fu. Ooh. And do you have a belt? Not yet. But you want to teach Kung Fu. Why do you want to teach Kung Fu? And tell me, Ellen. You want to teach it because it teaches people the values of life, right? It teaches people how to respect themselves. And how to believe in the goodness of all people. And the Kung Fu masters, are they ever thought unkindly of by their students? Never. And do you know why they're not thought unkindly of by their teachers? Because the teachers first believe in themselves. And the teachers believing in themselves make the best teachers in the world. And that's why you can be whatever you want to be, whether it's a Kung Fu teacher, or whether it's many of the other martial arts that are available. And you know there are a lot of them. And there's so much to learn from each one, isn't there? Yes. And you, Ellen, what do you want to do?
Be myself and have fun.
Be myself and have fun. Doesn't that sound like an interesting point of view? What would you do if you were being yourself and having fun?
What would I do?
Now, if you're being yourself, what would you do? Tell me.
I would exactly do what I'm doing now.
If you were be yourself, you'd be doing exactly what you're doing now. And what you're doing now is you're traveling around the world sharing lectures and seminars on positive thinking and positive living on values, right?
Right.
Okay, now, how did you go about doing that?
First by studying it and then by believing in it and living it.
In other words, first by preparing yourself to do it and then believing whatever you prepared yourself to do it and then lived it.
Right.
That's great. Now, that's being yourself. Now, how would you have fun doing that?
Whatever I do, I enjoy doing. And when I'm whatever I do, I enjoy doing, and that is the basic. If I'm doing something which I don't enjoy, I'm doing the wrong thing.
Well, now, do you think the Buddha ever did things he didn't enjoy?
No, he enjoyed himself.
And when did the Buddha become the Buddha? After his enlightenment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, what did he do before the enlightenment? He lived in limitation of himself, didn't he? And is that what he did after enlightenment?
No.
Why not?
Because he was enlightened. He was enlightened. Well, he knew
in other words, is living in limitation going to help us to be aware of enlightenment?
No.
Why not?
Because we are living in limitation.
You mean so long as we live in limitation, we can never be enlightened. Why did the Buddha experience enlightenment?
Because he could let go. He could let go any limitation, any judgment.
He let go any limitation and any judgment. And he listened to the divine within himself.
Yeah.
And did he find it?
Yeah.
That's beautiful. And how do you live your life in being yourself?
By seeing everybody as wonderful, by seeing everybody as wonderful and beautiful.
By seeing everybody as wonderful and beautiful.
Beautiful, magnificent.
And magnificent.
Yes.
And I think that's probably what most people do. And essentially that should sound very good, but actually it sounds very bad.
Mm-hmm.
What you want to do to be yourself and have fun, to be yourself and have fun, is to be yourself and have fun.
Mm-hmm.
To see yourself being wonderful, being fulfilled, see yourself living a life of beauty and drama. The father had his 6 children, and one child fell into the river, and he didn't know how to swim. So he did not save the child, but he did save the 5 by moving back away from the river and taking them away and learning to swim and teaching his children to swim and being a good father to 5, whereas he would have been no father to any of them had he gone in after the child who could not swim, and he could not swim. But you see, the world thinks, oh, he should jump in there and swim and catch that child. He should at least make a try. What do you mean, just die because he doesn't know how to swim? What about the rest of the kids? Who's going to feed them? Who's going to take care of them? Who's going to raise them? Who's going to love them, you know? And you see, we have sort of an odd idea of what our responsibilities are in life. Our responsibilities in life are first to make ourselves trained, as the Hindus do, as the Brahmins do. They teach themselves the first 20 years to do what? Go to school. The next 20 years to do what? Raise a family. The next 20 years to do what? Study their spiritual calling. Now, that's interesting, isn't it? Now, what did they do first? What should you do first? First, you prepare yourself. You prepare yourself for the path you want to walk. And how do you prepare yourself? You prepare yourself by saying, I am whole and perfect. You prepare yourself by saying, I listen to the divine within. You prepare yourself by knowing who you are and being who you are. And in knowing and being who you are, then you can accomplish any goal that you have for yourself in life, any goal at all. It doesn't matter what that goal may be. Now, can you do that? Mm-hmm. Now, what would you do in having fun?
I'd be whole and perfect. Whole and perfect.
Well, you say, for me, being fun is being whole and perfect.
All is in divine order.
And being all is in divine order. Well, okay.
Yes.
And Ellen, did she say anything else?
No, she said, for me, that's it.
For me, that's it.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought that's what I heard you say.
I'm whole and perfect.
Yes.
And all in divine order, therefore, I would have no problem.
I am.
I am the I am. I am whole and perfect.
I am.
The I am that I am.
That's just fine. But are you happy?
Yes.
And is that the answer to the question? How would you have fun in being yourself?
How would I have fun in
being myself? I would have fun in being myself by being happy. Now, you say merely because of something you're experiencing that there's particular areas you want to be. You're hungry, so you say, I have a good meal, and I'm full. You're thirsty, so you say, I have something to drink, and I'm not thirsty anymore. And you see, those are only temporary things. Only temporary things. To be yourself and have fun, to have fun means to live in a life that's filled with bliss, that's filled with peace, that's filled with harmony, that's filled with joy, right?
Perfect.
Huh?
Being whole and perfect.
And be whole and perfect. But of course you're whole and perfect. You see, now, but those are beautiful things, but those are just the temporary steps along the way. Here is a candy. It's a chocolate candy. A Hershey chocolate candy. It's sitting here, our favorite, right? It's sitting here. And so it's there, and I'm here, and I want to be happy. So I know that if I pick up that chocolate candy, I'll be happy. So I pick it up, and I'm still not happy. I'm still not happy, and it's getting closer. But I'm still not happy until I put it in my mouth and enjoy it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm very happy for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
So if I use that as an illustration of wanting to be happy, I'm limiting myself. Now, what do I really want to do? What I really want to do is to live in a state of bliss, peace, joy, harmony. How would you say you would act if you were happy? If someone said to you, what makes you happy? What would you answer them?
Harmony and balance.
I am myself.
Harmony and balance.
Harmony and, phew, that's great. Harmony and balance. Why does harmony and balance make us happy? Harmony and balance are two of the things that are so necessary in relationships, harmony and balance, so necessary in our body. Our body is in harmony and balance. Every organ, action, function of our body works perfectly, right? Harmony and balance is when our mind is in order. We are not mentally defunct or mentally unbalanced. Harmony and balance is when our mind is in order. You see, these are all, that's a positive, beautiful direction. But you see, now that's something that has more to it than just the instant moment. But the instant moment is good. That we work on. All right. What do you think would make you happy, sir?
I am happy.
Now, I think that's beautiful. I am happy. I am happy. Now, why do you think he's happy? Because he's master of himself. He's master of his thoughts. Does he let unhappy thoughts come into his mind, girls? Does he? No? You know him? You got a little incredulousness about you. Does he, by and large, most of the time, have happy thoughts? Yeah, okay. We'll give him that image here. You see, that's the trouble with our kids. They sometimes know our unhappy moments. But
they're not as
He is happy. Now, why, sweetheart, why do you say your dad is happy? Now, why do you say he's happy?
She's my girlfriend's daughter.
Your girlfriend. All right. Why does you say your boyfriend is happy?
He doesn't put bad things in his mind.
And do you think that's the most wonderful thing he could do? I do too. Now, why do you think most of the time he's happy?
Because he has what he needs.
Uh-huh. He what?
He has what he needs.
He has what he needs.
He has, oh, you're fulfilled. Wow, you have what you need. Man, ciao. He is a really fantastic guy. I'd hang in there with him. Now, how about you? What makes you happy?
I have what I need.
You have what?
I have what I need.
I have what I need.
Oh, you're well taught there. You listen well. I have what I need. And that makes you happy, doesn't it? Now, are there always some things that you would like to have more? But you have what you need. Now, how do you get what you'd like to have that's more? Do you speak your word? Do you say, I now have all the things that make me happy? Yes, that's what you say. And then that's done. And what about you? Are you fulfilled too?
Yes.
Wonderful. And you? Are you a fulfilled man? You are a fulfilled man, aren't you? No? You got a little ways to go, huh? Now, how can he ever be a fulfilled man? He can be a fulfilled man by starting to say, I am a fulfilled man. Yeah? I'd like to spend more time with you. I think that you've got great potential. And the rest of you are expressing your great potential very well. Did you say it too? Did you tell us too? I think that's great. And that's just the way it should be, isn't it? To be yourself and have fun. Now, let's take a few minutes before we are supposed to adjourn. Did anyone have any questions they wanted to ask about anything right at this moment? We'll be meeting here again tomorrow at 9, and you're all certainly welcome to be here. But did anyone have any questions for now? No? Okay. Let's all close our eyes for a few moments and just enter into a program meditation here for a moment. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. My spirit, mind, and body are good and very good. I live in a world that is filled with peace and love and harmony. And my world is good and very good. I live in a family filled with beautiful beings who recognize and love each other unconditionally. I live in a body that is absolutely whole and perfect. And every night before I go to bed and every morning when I wake up, I take my hands and I gently put my hands over my body from head to toe, not touching my body, but just an inch or so, half an inch above my body. And I say, body, I love you, 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 I love you. And unconditionally, I love my body. And as I do this, my body says, oh, about time. I love you too. I love you too. And our body just sparkles back to us. And the energy field of our hands and our body meet, and every inch of our body, every cell of our body is renewed, revitalized. Every cell of our body glows with positive healing power. And I am whole and perfect in every respect. As you do these things, as you meditate upon these things, just know that you are the miracle maker. And whatever I think, it is done unto me according to my thought. Know that, experience that, and enjoy that. For that is the truth, now and forevermore. I love you and I bless you. Have a wonderful evening.